Council regular scheduled work session. This is November 12th, 2024. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Mayor Prus?
Here.
Mr. Cleworth?
Here.
Ms. Therian?
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Here.
Ms. Tidwell?
Here.
Mr. Marnie?
I'm here.
Mr. Ringstad?
Here. Okay. First up is ordinance number 6291, introduced by Councilmember Sprinkle and Tidwell. An ordinance increasing staffing in the Fairbanks Fire Department by 6 firefighters and 3 captain's positions and amending the 2024 operating budget. We sort of did that on Friday. Any questions? Yes, Ms. Tidwell.
Are we gonna keep this?
No.
Or
we don't need to.
Because we have it in the budget.
Yeah.
Okay.
Madam Clerk?
It'll still be on Monday's agenda because that's when the council postponed it to. At that time, when it comes up, if the council wants to kill the ordinance, the motion to do so would be to postpone indefinitely.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Next is ordinance 6295. An ordinance ratifying the collective bargaining agreement between the City of Fairbanks and the Fairbanks Firefighters Union, IAFF Local 1326, advanced from the November 18th meeting. Mr. Sanders, would you bring us through this?
So this is the contract that that came up in mediation. This is what they've come through. We've had executive sessions on it. I'm not even really sure what I'm ready for any questions, I guess.
Ms. Sprinkle.
You can't make changes to this, right?
Correct.
So as an ordinance, it seems weird to me that we have it to talk about since we can't do anything to it. I'm frustrated with that.
It came out of mediation. This was a mediated agreement that we either vote up or down.
Because two of the components are wait, the fiscal notes go to this, the 4 and the 16. So I'll leave it at that. I'm real disappointed this is how it's had to go. So I will leave that as my comment. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Ms. Therian.
Can we ask the chief questions?
You can, yes.
Okay.
I was wondering when we'd get to that. Chief Kakaro.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, Council.
So under this mediation agreement, we would have 4 platoons.
It gives us the opportunity to set up a 4 platoon schedule within 6 months of the contract being ratified.
Okay. So we could keep it at 3 platoons, but it would cost us extra money.
I guess that's one to look at. I'll lean on Tom since he was actually in that discussion. I think the plan is to go to 4 platoons.
Yep.
The 3 platoon concept would be if the 4th platoon fails for some reason. It wouldn't be an either or option. The 3rd platoon is only an off ramp if the 4th platoon fails. But Tom may be better to speak to that than I am.
No, that's correct. The way that the CBA reads, within 6 months' time, we would move to a 4 platoon system. And then, as Chief Kakaro mentioned, if that 4 platoon system were to fail for any reason, we'd have to revert back to a 3 platoon system. That 3 platoon system would be extremely expensive.
Right.
What would the percentage cost upgrade on pay to the firefighters be? Approximately 29%?
29% if we go back
the life of the contract.
Boy.
But that's only if we go back to the 3 platoon, I think, right, Mayor?
Yes. Okay.
Question. And how many firefighters do we need to go to the 4 platoons?
With the T8 agreement, I would suspect that we would need somewhere between 14 to 16 firefighters to make that work with the current debit day that was offered. You can do it with any number of people that you want. The less people means more overtime. More people means less overtime. there were some changes in that T8 agreement that make that number a little bit harder to match, but Mike put a lot of work into that, and I did as well, and we feel it's going to be in that 14 to 16 range. But there are ways to try to modify that, but as you lower your amount of firefighters, you're looking at the need for either more debit days or more overtime to cover the schedule, assuming we keep our service level the same as we do today, which I think we should.
Ms. Tidwell, then Ms. Sprinkle.
I had one more question.
Oh, Ms. Therian.
So what do you think realistically you could hire of the 14 to 16 people to fill that fourth platoon? Could you do it in the 6 months?
I think 16 people would be a stretch to find initially, to be honest. I think when we were first working with these numbers of around 10 was not a problem. I feel like within 6 months we'd land very close to that 16, but I don't know if there's 16 firefighters who could, you know, hit the road and be ready to run. But I'm pretty confident we could get close to that.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Tidwell, then Ms. Sprinkle.
That's actually what I was going to ask about was the
Yeah, and it, you know, it's a market, you know, it's a timing game, right? You know, 5 months ago I felt a lot more confident. Now there's a lot of cities that are hiring, so that pool's thinning out as we sit here talking about hiring folks. So it's a moving target. So I want to say that we could, but I don't want to guarantee that we can because, you know, there's a lot of big municipalities hiring firefighters in this current period of time.
Ms. Sprinkle.
You know, we wanted to move to the fourth platoon to make this more equitable for all. In the fire department, we thought we were really broaching on a great idea that would help incentivize people to come, people to stay, make it affordable to the city. And now because of debit days and this looming six-month punishment to the city if we don't have everything up and running, I'm very disappointed that that's where we are. And we can't seem to make the adjustments I think we want to make, because I think as a body, we want to do this the right way. I'm just really sad that this is where we are. It's a either or, and I don't feel like there's any wiggle room that makes sense. I'm just really heartbroken by this. So I'm going to leave it.
Mr. Sanders first.
Sorry, I just want to point out, it's not just the debit days that's the problem. The debit days adds two more people to them only doing 10 debit days adds two more people to this mix. But the real killer is the automatic third leave slot when there's 15 people. That's what's really killing you guys. They get automatic leave.
We don't know what that means, the third leave slot.
They automatically right now get two leave slots. They put it in a contract. As soon as they have 15 people on a shift, they get a third leave slot. So that's adding another person per shift. So that's
okay.
They get to take leave without the chief's permission. They get to just be on leave.
So currently in your contract, we allow them to have two people off, no questions asked. And there's no if there's staffing available, if there's people available to work or not. If first come, first serve. If you sign up, you're guaranteed off for that day. Barring some weird exceptions. In the current contract and future contracts, once the staffing level hits 15 per shift, they added a third leave slot, so then we'd be guaranteeing three people off, which puts your margin for minimums and how many people are on shift another step above, which also complicates your staffing for that day. So
basically you're guaranteeing 25% of your personnel a leave slot that day, no matter what.
If minimums hit 15, or if our staffing level hits 15, that third leave slot becomes available. Yes,
Mr. Marty, then Mr. Sprinkle, Ms. Sprinkle.
Okay.
What union is the admin side of your department in?
They're in IAFF. They're in the same union.
Well, how come they're treated so differently in this contract? I mean, it's almost like they're a redheaded stepchild.
I don't have a good answer for that, Mr. Marty. That'd be a better question for the IAFF leadership.
Ms. Sprinkle.
You know, part of our push in this is to allow the chief to make better decisions as to who's doing what when. As I understand it, if at some point there's a staff shortage, we brown out the third ambulance, which is, I think, the only apparatus we don't want to see browned out. So that seems like a poison pill to me, and also that part of this was to allow the chief to have management decisions to be made by him for his own department. And now it sounds like, well, because of math, you're forced to then allow someone else to have the third debit?
It's the third leave slot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, I don't know that we're making anything better. And
Ms. Tidwell, then Ms. Ringstead.
On the leave slots, if they did have 15 and they're able to do three, I mean, does that mean that every single day there are three people taking leave? Or is that just dependent on if there's somebody hurt? I mean, is there so much vacation time out
so,
there that
yeah, that's a fair question. I think that just because you have a leave slot available doesn't mean someone will take it. There are days currently that we don't have two people off. I would say the more days than not we have those leave slots filled. But since we've never really had a third leave slot since I've worked here, it's hard to say how often that would be used. But that availability would be there. So I think the smart budgeting concept would be to assume that it will be filled than not. So that way you can have a better feel of what that's going to look like cost-wise for the city. It really just balances down to your minimum staffing number, how many above that minimum you can or are willing to go to. And then, I mean, obviously if you hired 50 firefighters per shift, it doesn't matter if you had three people off, but that's an unrealistic number to shoot for, obviously, too. So there is a little bit of a balancing act and a give and take. I think we have to all kind of sit down and think through this contract. Once again, it's a long document. There's a lot of information in there. There's a lot of nuances, little tweaks. There's been some big tweaks as well. But every part of that contract matters. So I think really digging into it and finding where you feel there are good and bad and weaknesses and strengths is going to be very important going forward. I think the city did get some steps in the right direction. I think the union also took some steps in the right direction. I don't think overall it's a horrible document. I don't think it's the best document in the world either for both sides, but I think that's what negotiations are for. There are some things I think we need to sit down and really consider to make sure that it's the best path forward overall.
Mr. Ringstead.
These leave days, are they paid or unpaid?
They're all paid leave.
Well, they can just decide that they don't want to have three guys don't want to work today and they get paid for it anyway.
Well, yeah, the current contract, there's two people that can have a leave slot per day. That's just built in.
If they had accrued that.
Right. I mean, they have to have personal leave in their bank account, if you will.
Right.
So if you have no leave, you can't take personal leave. You'd have to either swap the day or go through the leave without pay process through the city's, you know, definition of how to get there. But generally speaking, if they have, you know, if they have 24 hours, they can take that without any concern on our end.
When you're working these long schedules, are they days, the hours?
How
much do they get every year?
Yeah, so they're based off of an hourly earning per so many per month or pay period. Margarita probably has that memorized off the top of her head. It's based off of years of service. And then, of course, you know, you get so many per pay period.
14 hours per pay period.
And you get two pay periods a month?
That's
yes,
correct.
So 28 hours a month. Does that count as a little over a day if you're in there for 24
yes.
hours?
It would be over one shift.
They
so
would
that's
be
one
24
day a month.
Hours.
So getting,
yes.
They're getting 14 days a year.
And that's the low end. That's when you start.
Well, you start at 14 days.
Mm-hmm. And then
so
it moves
in everybody else's world, that would be like starting with 3 weeks vacation. When you start your job, and goes up from there.
Ms. Tidwell.
I think this is a question for Tom. Could you maybe talk about the process if we didn't pass this? Like this contract came out of mediation. If we weren't able to get behind this, how that would go for us?
Sure. So when you're replacing a CBA collective bargaining agreement, it goes through a period of negotiation where the city and the union try to negotiate the replacement. That negotiation period is done with this contract, and so it went into mediation. The mediation is where both parties basically come with, you know, the best that they can offer and what they can try to do. And out of that, you come up with an agreement. You don't always. In either case, if you don't come up with an agreement out of mediation, or if that agreement isn't ratified by either this body or the union membership, then you land in arbitration. In arbitration, you're supposed to narrowly identify what is at issue. An arbitrator is selected from a national group. That arbitrator sits in and basically referees an agreement between the parties. So whether the mediation failed and you didn't have an agreement, or if either side doesn't ratify at this point, it'll end up in arbitration.
So if we end up in arbitration, the arbitrator is going to bring us a document, basically, and give us another chance to ratify it?
So the arbitrator wouldn't be, both sides would go to the arbitrator and argue basically for what they want, what they want for a resolution. The arbitrator will decide based on what's presented to them, the resolution to the problem. That resolution would then come, yes, before you again, as an agreement to ratify.
So we have no idea what that might be. And when that decision comes to us to, again, pass or fail, I would think, like, there's no guarantee that what we're going to get is better than what we're looking at today.
It's not binding arbitration.
It's correct that there is no guarantee that what will come out of arbitration is better or worse than what's in front of you today. It's also correct to say that you would have an up or down vote on whatever comes out of that. There are court battles on whether or not that's binding. The arbitration is binding, and we would have to play that out at that stage.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Is there any other department that's gotten a 29% raise this year?
No.
It worries me to think that this is a department I really think is so important to our city. It's so important, and that.
Ms. Sprinkle, it's a very important department. But from day one, I've told you this is the direction that would happen. We have four bargaining units. This is the only unit we have ever had to go to arbitration with since I've been on the city council or in the mayor's seat. The only one. This was an expectation. We're now here. This is part of our process. We're going to get through it. Ms. Tidwell.
It's only 29% if we're unable to pull off 4 platoon. No. I mean, how many people would you need to hire to have 4 platoon? I mean, I realize the less you hire,
right,
there's overtime.
Right. So
there are almost enough people. There's a lot of
options there. The less people we hire, the more overtime you'll see come to light later on in the contract.
Ms. Therian.
I know we kind of fluffed over 6291, but I don't see the reason why we're not trying to at least get some more firefighters and captains, and now just getting an idea where this is going with this contract. I think we need to pass 6291 and get the captain hiring, the chief hiring some more people so we can get the process going, because it looks like no matter what, whether we go to agree to this mediated agreement or go to arbitration, we need to hire more people. So I'm really confused as to why you just want to postpone indefinitely 6291. That's my feeling.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Valerie, we have added these people into the current proposed budget. That's why we didn't.
Well, we still need more, so.
Well.
I have a feeling that Mr. Merritt is working on hiring the process already. So, anyway, Ms. Tidwell.
With the positions in the budget, those would be effective January 1st?
Yes.
Versus if we did pass the ordinance at the next meeting, they could do it instantly? Or is it?
Well, the process has already started. You know, he's already looking for more people. They're already doing that.
Is that?
They have to be budgeted before we can start the hiring process.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
if we did go ahead and pass the ordinance, they could do that.
Any other questions before we move on?
That makes sense.
Okay. Number four on our list is ordinance number 6296, an ordinance amending the Fairbanks General Code, section 2-1181.1, to add an additional city council member to the finance committee. This is from me, so we could put a third person on. I call this a Christmas present. And you just get Mr. Ringstead.
Why we have to do an ordinance?
Our when we created the finance committee, the ordinance had two city council members as a voting member. Any city council member can sit in on it, but it's a voting member. And when I rearranged everything, I did not put Valerie on the Fairbanks Diversity Council, shifted everyone around a little bit. So I put Jerry on the Finance Committee along with John, and Ms. Sprinkle had a separation anxiety moment, we call it.
Most of our committees set up this way?
What's that?
Are all the rest of our committees set up this way?
Yes.
I like continuity.
I like continuity. And so this is for, you know, you can have 3, 4, 5, however many you want. But I thought the only other committee that Mr. Clearworth was on was the Fast Planning. So I thought with his institutional knowledge of fiscal management here, he'd be perfect for the Finance Committee. And anyway, so... Ms. Sprinkle.
First of all, thank you for my Christmas gift. But this is just a curious question. Is it because it's a code change that we're doing ordinance versus resolution? This doesn't have any money to it, right? Okay. That was it. I just wanted to.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we're changing.
Okay.
Any other discussion on it? Okay, seeing none. Next is ordinance number 6297. It's an ordinance adopting the 2025 operating budget and capital budgets. Okay. And we will go to Ms. Bell on this one.
Good morning, everyone. I just wanted to let you know that this ordinance is set for the mayor's budget and will be changed after our meeting on Thursday to fit all of the changes that you've made throughout the budgeting process based on a majority vote. So this is just to let you know it'll be on this next council meeting. However, it will look different. It will be based on whatever decisions you've made at the end of Thursday's budget meetings.
Okay. Ms. Therrien.
Margarita, so some of the changes we had already agreed, those are not included.
No, they are not included, but they will be when you see it on Monday night. And I will have another sheet that shows you what areas you've changed.
Mr. Ringstead.
Capital budget side of this. We, in our meeting the other day, we talked about getting a list of priorities that we need to figure out for our legislative meetings, but I guess that's included in that are some capital items, or we should be thinking about, are they in our capital items? So just as a thought, we haven't discussed that a whole lot as a group. So
is a heads up that there's gonna be more?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that it,
yes.
Speak now or forever hold your peace, you know. We're going to try and pass a budget here in the next couple of weeks, so we better get it on the table and talk about
it. Any other discussion? Okay.
So, John, you're saying the stuff that didn't get put into the mayor's budget, we might want to put on our legislative priorities?
Well, I mean, it maybe is in the governor's or the mayor's capital budget. Yeah. Let's, what do we want to put here, and what other, are there other stuff that we want to put into the budget or combine the two? I mean, I'm kind of hoping that the two run parallel.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Generally, we get a little conversation going about what we think the shopping list should be prior to.
That's being created, and you're having a meeting on that on, what, the 26th, I believe. Yes.
Yeah. At night, not a work meeting.
A morning special.
Oh, oh, good.
We're special.
Another morning meeting.
We'll go through it then, and then we'll arrange a time with the Interior Delegation sometime in December, another work session to go through with them. 16th? Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on. Ordinance number 6298, an ordinance amending the Fairbanks General Code, Chapter 2, Section 655, multi-year contracts, clarifying requirements for multi-year amendments to multi-year contracts. Mr. Cleworth's introduction. You want to bring us through this, Jerry?
Well, thank you. After our discussion some weeks ago on this part of our code, the city attorney had some recommendations that he thought would make it much more clear, and he bounced them off me, and I agree. We're talking about three words here. It just clarifies exactly what we're trying to do here, is that when we ever have a long-term contract, we need to identify a funding source for it. Otherwise, it puts us in an extremely precarious situation of non-funding, where we're reneging on a contract, and we do not want to do that. So, and Tom, did you want to add something?
It just, as Councilmember Cleworth commented, there are three words that are being changed in the code. Those three words, and in particular, the to approve or modify a multi-year contract, the question came up, is an amendment to a multi-year contract a multi-year contract in and of itself? And if the answer to that question is yes, then the requirements of a multi-year contract would trigger. If the answer to that question is no, then the requirements of that amendment might not trigger. There was some question there. I think the intention of council was that the amendment to a multi-year contract should also follow the requirements of a multi-year contract. This just tightens the language up a little bit to clarify that intent.
Mr. Ringstead, then Ms. Sprinkle.
This is, seems to be more focused on contracts like we're negotiating now. But if we go into some of our construction contracts where it seems like, okay, every year we say we start this project, but now we got to reallocate the money and she's got to do all the work to make it batch because now it's a multi-year contract. So I'm assuming this applies to all of those capital projects that are multi-year contracts. Mm-hmm. And it makes more sense to me that we don't make more work for Margarita, so she's got to book it in, book it out every year to do these. But I guess I would like to hear her thoughts on it. Was that clear as mud?
Yes, and it's clear.
You're a clear person, Mr. Ringstead.
Yes. And, mm-hmm. Yes, I do. And the Finance Committee, we are looking at that capital fund because he's correct. You know, we're taking things in, we're taking things out. And there was a comment on one of our projects where it was like, you know, Ms. Therian questioned why were we budgeting for something? And the Finance Committee is looking at that capital fund because this one does fall. A lot of our projects fall into a multi-year kind of situation where we know that we can start it, we can only do part of it for the first year, and then we have to unappropriate it and reappropriate it, and it causes a lot. So we are looking at what we can do about especially that capital fund that falls into this category a lot and trying to find a way to address it. And so expect something from the Finance Committee on that. Hopefully I addressed what you were referring to.
Off our books and put it back on our books for next year and back and forth. And you know, all we're doing is
Ms. Therrien.
Paper.
Margarita, if we said all multi-year contracts, not including construction contracts, would that resolve the issue? And then it's all just labor? Or
Mr. Chard?
So generally speaking, and Margarita certainly can correct me, the construction projects that are approved for multi-year projects have a allowance in them that when they go to seek your approval and your authority, that allowance is kind of baked into them. So I would imagine that a multi-year construction project that required an amendment and required an ordinance amending that contract would have exceeded that authority that you had provided originally. And so in that scenario, I think you would still want to know the cost for the duration of the project, not just for that amendment. So I think it would still apply both on the labor side of the house and also on the project side of the house.
Yeah, I agree.
An example of that, sadly, is our child care area. How many times have we come back for increases in that? So, or the roof. Can't wait to see the heating system. Okay, anything else on that before we move on? Finance Committee, we'll start with Margarita.
Okay, the Finance Committee is scheduled to meet on Thursday, November the 21st at 7 a.m. And as I mentioned earlier, we are looking at capital fund multi-projects and how we can address that. And we will also look at, we're looking at some revitalization kind of projects and what we can do with that, as well as reviewing the financials as of October 31. I brought, you also have before you, it should be a financial document. One of the questions that we've had during the budget process was regarding the funds. This is a report that our Finance Committee reviews after, shortly after the audit or when we're close to finalizing the audit. And I thought it would be a good document for you in regards to how many funds we have, what they look like. And this is as of December 31, 2023. And if you want to turn to the section that says up at the top, right under the City of Fairbanks, the Statement of Revenues, Expenditures, and Changes, and Fund Balance, and it should have revenues, and you should see expenditures on that report. If you'll flip to that side, you'll have before you eight funds. And just to give you an accounting definition of a fund, it's like you have a special purpose, and you're setting up a fund that kind of handles just that special purpose. And as you look through the top categories on this report, you can see that risk has a special purpose. You're accounting for the revenue and expenditures associated with that particular fund. You'll see capital fund. And that's what a fund is. It kind of breaks out, instead of everything in one big pot, it kind of breaks out based on special revenue, break out those different types of areas. In our audit, we have eight funds. If you were looking into our financial statements, I mean, in our books, you'll see more than eight funds, but they're all represented under these different categories. The one that you work with the most and by code that you appropriate or you budget is the general fund. And you'll see as of December 31, we had revenues of $41.7 million, and we spent $40.9 million, close to $41 million. And we had an excess of revenue over expenditures. If we were looking at a for-profit kind of world, that would be our income, net income at the end of the year, and that was $739,000. in our government world, we have these other financing sources, and that is just defined in when we transfer from one fund to the other fund. And you see in other financing sources, we had 1.7 million, and then we had a net change in what we call fund balance of 2.5 million. And that's what happened in December the 31st. 31st at 2023. And of course, this picture is going to look a little different when we get to 2024, because under other financing sources, we transfer $7 million from the general fund. We made some changes there. Now, and your next fund that you have is your permanent fund. And that fund, you see that we had investment earnings in 2023, December of $16.8 million. The by code dictates what we can expense out of the permanent fund, and that is the cost for investment management and custodian fees that we have. We have two different types of fees that can come out of those funds, and that total almost $102,000, if I was rounding. And you can see the excess, or like we said, the net income. And you see this other financing sources, that 5.5 there, million, you can see the transfer in. Those are funds that we kind of transferred in throughout the year. And then we have these transfer out, which is the payment from the permanent fund to the general fund and the capital fund. The next fund that you have is a grants and contracts. And this grants and contracts includes asset forfeiture, which we report on every year. You approve through resolution whenever we have a grant application that is approved through you through resolution. Unless it requires a budget amendment, then you'll see an ordinance. And this one also included the ARPA fund. So ARPA funds, which we have expended in full this year with the final receipt of the engine that came in, fire apparatus. So you see that the grants, we had 5.27 in funds and expenditures of 5.24. That balance that you see in that account is mainly your asset forfeiture balance that you see, the 64,302. And then after that, your next fund is your capital fund. You'll see that the capital fund had 1.1. That is what we call equipment replacement that is being transferred from each individual department into the capital fund. You'll see the expenditures of 3.1. Even though we may budget for 7 and 9 million, this is the actual amount that was paid in 2023. And then you see the transfer end is mainly from when the council approved transfers from the capital fund. You have the permanent fund bringing in, and you see that that's mainly where it gets its sources. It's usually from transfer through two different methods. And then you see that at the end of 2023, it was at 19 million. Your next fund is your risk fund. And you'll see the revenue there is 1.9. That is the levy that we had in 2023, and that was based on the expenses we had in 2022. So whatever our total expenses were for the prior year, that's what we levy in the second year. So take, for example, you see your expenses were 2.5 million last in 2023, then 2.588 is what we're going to request in 2024 levy. Minus the general insurance, I should state. And then you have the transfer in from the general fund for general insurance. And this is always usually going to be a negative. Next year it might be a positive if our expenses are lower, but it's going to be, it's like a lag in the amount that comes in from property taxes. We have a leave fund, what we call an internal service fund, which means that it only benefits the funds and everything. It only benefits within the city or the departments, kind of like your general account, but we try to keep an account for the leave. And this is the liability for annual leave that is earned, or compensation time that the city has to pay for hourly employee. So as of December 31st, the value of that account was $1.8 million, and, or close to $1.9 million. And you'll see that as the expenditure, we're kind of accruing that cost and making sure that there are funds available for that. The next fund is the MUS fund. This is really, this is depreciation. And we still receive revenue from the lease of the Golden Heart utility lease. And this fund is just really capturing the depreciation on that building until they exercise the option to purchase or decide not to exercise that option. And you'll see the by code, the amount that we receive in these funds are all automatically transferred to the permanent fund. The last one we have, that FTC, is your parking garage, Fairbanks Transportation Center. That's the way it's indicated in our financial statements. You'll see the total revenues are $209,000, but you see your expenditures of $439,771. This includes depreciation. So if we remove $200,000, you'll see basically it's about $39,000 down. The $209,000 is really the cash or that you receive from the parking garage. So there is a slight loss there in that year, but that window is closing a lot from what we've seen in past years. So this is just a quick snippet of what is going on, all of the different funds, give you a feel for the different funds that are reported for annually in your audit, and just looking at it on one page.
Any questions? On one page. Mr. Marney, then Mr. Ringstead.
On the parking garage, does that include the labor? The way that parking garage is manage is the city has an agreement with Golden Heart Parking Services, and they've changed their name slightly, and we pay the actual cost of managing actual cost of that building, and we pay a portion of their salaries and benefits.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Never mind, I'll come back to that.
Mr. Ringstead.
A couple of questions. Yeah, I wasn't sure which way your numbers went on the parking garage. Was the depreciation the 200 or was it the 30?
Appreciation is 200.
So
it's close to 190.
Cash out of pocket, we're down less 30.
You're down. Yeah.
And that comes up out of our general government.
Yes.
Cost somewhere.
It'll be eventually your general government. As you can see, at the end of the year, the net change in fund balance was down negative $233.90. Right. At some point in time, the general fund might make up that difference.
On your leave account?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Okay, we put money in there. Is that cash out leave?
Yes, that
so
is.
So we're actually cutting them checks for leave times that they're cashing out, or?
What you're seeing is an accrual of the leave that is earned throughout the year.
Right.
And so what we do is we expense it and we apply the revenue that we transfer into the account to ensure that we have the funds. So this is a good feel for letting you know how much was earned total in 1 year.
So do we... If they're not using their leave time, are we paying them? Can you cash it out?
No, they can cash it out at any time.
So you need to have the cash available
to do
that.
So we have the cash available to do it. That's what this does.
Okay. Mm-hmm. On your capital expenditures account?
Yes.
You said these numbers in expenditures are what we actually paid out in that year, calendar year.
Correct.
It's not the cost of the projects.
Correct.
Ms. Sprinkle.
So, Margarita, that
parking garage, the loss, where does that number, the 230,000, where does that end up in our budget book?
Eventually, it is not in your budget book unless I transfer funds to cover the loss.
So we never know it's costing us.
No. You get this review every year. You look at the what the final product is for the parking garage. But majority of this is your depreciation.
Okay.
Which I is guess, a non-cash.
I guess where I am with this is that this is an entity the city owns that we know very little about. And mm-hmm. we're paying for it, and we don't know that we're doing it. We just don't know until you say there's an audit, but there's no accounting for it. I know the fire department has their buildings, and the city hall has its buildings, and the training centers, and all this. But this is the one that we don't know much about.
Yeah, and we can do a report on it every year, or as it progresses throughout, we can report on whenever you want. A report on the parking garage, I can provide it to you to show you how much you're paying and utilities for it and what you're paying for it.
Yep. I'd like to ask for that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, Marnie.
I can do that.
I know a couple of years ago, council put the parking garage up for sale. Do we have any bites on that, Mike? Do you recall?
Nothing realistic, no.
You'd have to pay off the existing grant bond debt, so to speak. And that's at $2 million, so it's not an asset that's going to
bring us money,
give a return to make it available for someone to want to buy. Simple as that. Any
I
other
will
questions?
State that they have changed management in that facility, and I've seen a big change in the revenue that's generated from it. They've done an outstanding job making changes in that.
Anything else? Okay, let's go to council member comments. Ms. Sprinkle. Ms. Therrien.
Yes. I just thought I'd bring this to your attention that we did a resolution, what our priorities are to look at that. And if you have any comments, we'll be meeting. But this is, we just have a lot there. I don't know, Mike was thinking we might want to reduce it, but.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot to me, but that's completely up to you guys. Yeah.
Mr. Clayworth.
Speaking of that, I see Vivian is here, and I know she has some concerns about Moore Street, and we're looking at our capital priorities. Maybe if we have a minute, we can have her come speak on that. I think what she is hoping that maybe we get that on the list. Would that be correct?
Yeah. Do I have permission?
Yeah.
Ms. Stiver.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. I haven't been up this early for a meeting in this building for quite a while. Oh, memories. Whew. So, two things. One is, yes, we got vetoed in the governor's budget, as you guys are well aware, of our siting request for $450,000. We're holding on to $350,000 we got from the state to do windows. So the issue for me is I don't want to see any wasted money. If we do windows and then we do siding a few years later, you got to undo the work you did on the windows to do the siding. So our goal is to do them together. Our building's been there for 30 years. And the board has been very diligent in fixing all the major components. We have a new boiler. We did some, we got door openers for our seniors. So we've really taken care of the mechanicals of this building. So what we're lacking is repairing that T111 siding, which I believe now has a few carpenter ants living in it, as a couple ants got into a couple of apartments. So we'd really like to get that T111 off and put siding that will last and not require, you know, repair and maintenance, because we've repaired that siding several times to about 10 grand. That's a waste of money, too. So I would ask that 450 be a request from the city. I have all the narrative I can provide to the city. Last year, we did put it in under Moore Street, and you guys did it as a priority. However, I'd like for you guys to submit it in your CAPSIS rather than I do it, if that works for you guys. And then the other flip side is good news. We did qualify, and I think you're going to see a resolution regarding the community block grant, because we have a parking lot in 30 years that has not been, you know, properly cared for. The asphalt has exceeded its life. The curbs are falling apart. We have some radius issues in front of the building. I don't even know how the fire engine got in there like that. You come around and you turn. It's very tight. And I know that Vantran comes often, and they have a longer wheelbase on some of their vehicles. They have to come onto the sidewalk. And in the winter, unfortunately, when that tire goes over that sidewalk, it creates ice. And, you know, as good as we are with our sidewalks, we can't be out there, you know, all the time. So we try to keep people off the sidewalk. So I do have a concern. I want to share it with you because I like to be totally upfront with you. I was unaware, and I didn't ask, I should have asked, that there's a 25% match to the funds. Now, engineering is, I sent them an email so we could discuss the scope to kind of take care of the sidewalk issue and all the other, drainage is a big issue. We've got drainage that goes right in the path to go into the brand new senior center for our residents. The drainage creates ice. And then in the driveway, we get puddling, and we get ice and slush, and we have tenants that will walk to the sidewalk or walk to the bus stop. There is not a path through there because the drainage is that bad. But so my concern is a 25% match. We have some funds, but, you know, over time, we've expended that fund. I mean, our new gas dual boiler cost us $65,000. In our reserve, so they're fairly low. So we have some money for a match. My concern is that the project may come higher. And so I don't know if there is a methodology to assist with the match. I don't know how this works. It's the first time I've done it, but I feel like I need to be upfront with you because you guys are providing the money. So if anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to ask.
Ms. Ringstead.
Sorry?
How much?
How much is?
You said 25% of what?
Of the amount awarded, I believe, Margarita.
What was that?
Yeah. So for $100,000, you got to match $25,000. Is my math right?
Yes.
That's what you're.
Yeah, so that's kind of a hefty, hefty little lift for us. We don't want to deplete our reserves because I hate to say this because I feel like I'm always saying what's what, but we have a roof that is 30 years old. And as we know, it needs to be done too. And there, nothing is cheap today.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Thanks for coming.
Mm-hmm.
Who owns the building, the property?
City owns a property in the parking lot. HUD built the building for $1.3 million. And the board, I don't understand all the legalities, jointly own the property. And we operate under a HUD contract. So we're not financeable. There's no way we're financeable through any other entity. And so it's kind of an interesting... I'm sure the mayor knows the real estate that this is really kind of a different setup. And so, very different.
Oh,
and so it's operated by a 7-member board, local board. And then we contract with HUD for what they call a Prac 202. It's seniors 62 years or older that are at 50% or less of the poverty rate for the area. So we have some... So when we go through their paperwork and they qualify financially, the rent, market rate rent for the unit would be $1,196 a month, includes electricity, and there's some amenities they have to pay for. The tenant only pays 30% of their adjusted gross income. I have some tenants that only pay like $190 of their own, and the subsidy comes in, HUD pays the rest. So you can imagine what their annual income is or their monthly income is if their rent is that low. If that's 30% of what they're getting. So we really are serving people in our community, our seniors with low income, with a very good program where they can remain independent and afford it.
So you can't fund, it's not like you can renegotiate your mortgage because you have such a weird
mortgage
financing.
Is gone. And so we don't right. have a mortgage, but no, we have
no equity, something
we
like
have
that.
No equity. It's a very odd, it's just, yeah, it's an odd situation. It's a typical situation for HUD. It's not unusual, but there is no financing available.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. Therrien.
Yes, would you get that information to us and the explanation to add to our list?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's already there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to go back to Mr. Ringstead for council member comments. You know, you still got a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 7 o'clock to say something.
I got three more shots at you this week.
Mr. Marty.
See you in the morning.
Ms. Tidwell. No comments from me. We are adjourned. Our next regular work session will be Tuesday, November 26, 7 a.m.